By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
I'm Danielle Reed, and this is Moody's Talks, Focus on Finance. In today's episode, where inflation, monetary policy, and real estate meet, it can spell a highly volatile mix for lenders, the housing and property sectors, and the broader economy. Joining me in New York will be Bob Garofalo of the insurance team in the U.S. to talk about where the housing market is going and what it means for U.S. mortgage insurers. I'll also talk to Louise Wallin in Stockholm about the Swedish central banks taking on inflation there by raising policy rates fairly aggressively, and what that means for banks and for mortgage borrowers. Later from London, my co-host Miles Nelligan will talk to Louise and also to Maria Gilholm of the corporate finance team in Stockholm about how higher policy rates and growing investor caution are driving up funding costs for commercial real estate companies in Sweden, and what kind of risks that poses to banks. Miles, hi. It is nice to have you back.
Hi, Danielle. It's very nice to be back.
So, Miles, what are some of the key highlights from your conversation with Maria and Louise? What's happening with real estate and why is it important for banks?
Well, real estate company loans account for around 16% of the bank's total loan book, which is a fairly substantial share.
I see. And what's happening around the changing monetary policy environment?
Well, growing investor caution is the main force that's driven significantly higher funding costs for real estate companies. But the Swedish Central Bank has also raised policy rates several times in 2022 to curb inflation, and that has amplified the increase. The last raise in rates was a significant 1 percentage point, and the Riksbank has signaled that it plans to keep raising policy rates into next year. So for real estate companies, it's more favorable to refinance through banks than through bond markets.
Okay, so what will they do?
Well, if they can't refinance in the capital markets, they will look for alternative sources. And that, of course, includes bank loans.
But the banks already have a lot of real estate loans on their books.
Yeah, that's the dilemma. Banks are likely to refinance some of the maturing debt, but most probably not all of it.
I see. And so banks will also probably see an uptick in problem loans?
Well, it's very likely there will be some increase, but in this sector, they're starting from a very low level of problem loans. And as we'll hear in a moment from Louise, the loans that they do have on their books are very conservatively underwritten.
Got it. So from the Swedish bank's perspective, those factors are going to counterbalance the risks somewhat, I guess. Miles, I'm really looking forward to your conversation with Maria and Louise in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for Fast Finance, where Moody's analytic team gives its views on the credit implications of topics in the news. Joining me now from New York is Bob Garofalo of the insurance team. Bob, hi. Welcome back to Focus on Finance.
Hi, Danielle. It's good to be back.
So, Bob, just a couple of questions, mainly about where the mortgage insurance sector is headed. Now, mortgage insurance, which protects lenders against the risk of mortgage borrower default, is naturally sort of a bellwether for what's happening in the housing market and the economy in the U.S. more broadly. Now, we're in a rising interest rate environment for the first time in a long time in the U.S., with 30-year fixed mortgage rates up over 6% right now versus closer to 3% a year ago. I saw in your most recent sector update that profitability has been strong for the mortgage insurers this year. But, you know, what do you see a little further ahead?
Well, Danielle, profitability has been good for the mortgage insurance sector in 2022, but mortgage rates are up sharply from a year ago, which has definitely started to slow new business volumes. So new business written is down almost 20% for the first half of this year versus the first half of last year. Now, we're really not talking about volumes plummeting. Actually, in the near term, we expect origination volumes to remain pretty high, but certainly lower than what we've seen the last 2 years.
Okay. And, you know, what about even, let's say, a little further out than the near term?
Well, as you mentioned in your comments, the U.S. economy is at an inflection point with a downshift in growth ahead. We've seen two consecutive quarters of declining real GDP in the first 6 months of this year. Inflation is much higher than a year ago. So with that, the Fed has responded by raising policy interest rates. And U.S. GDP forecasted by Moody's is expected to slow to around 1% in 2023 or next year. But looking at the overall housing market with that backdrop, the upward trend in home prices is almost certainly going to pull back as we move into 2023. I mean, at the very least, home prices will slow down, and it's possible that prices will undergo a correction over the next 2 years. But, you know, the magnitude of that will really be limited by a few fundamental housing strengths. I'm thinking about three items: favorable demographic trends, for example, also solid underwriting, and lingering housing supply constraints from a period of underbuilding.
Right. So as to that last point, demand being much higher than supply of housing is something to keep in mind. What does this changing picture mean, though, for mortgage insurers?
Well, the changing picture means rising mortgage rates will continue to dampen new demand and slow house price appreciation. Now, to be clear, this should not have much of an effect on the finances of existing homeowners, because most have already refinanced their mortgage debt at low rates and long maturities. Also, you have to realize that in the last few years, mortgage insurers have built up quite an equity cushion on these mortgages, thanks to a long run of home price gains. So that should keep claim rates low. Now, it's true that refinance activity has dropped significantly from mid-2021. But what that means is people keep paying their mortgages, which is good for mortgage insurers, because, you know, it leads to higher profitability and lower losses.
I see. Now, but what happens if there's a recession?
A continued slowdown or recession, this is a risk for mortgage insurers. So it will depend on severity and duration, of course, but it would very likely raise delinquencies and weaken profitability. But for now, as we head into the changing economic conditions, the mortgage insurer's capitalization remains at high levels. It's supported by good reinsurance coverage on the company's portfolios. So because of these supportive factors I just mentioned, borrowers with low fixed debt payments, housing supply constraints, still strong employment, and good financial conditions of the mortgage insurers, we would expect better outcomes for mortgage insurers than in previous recessions.
Bob, thanks for that. And we're now joined by Louise Villeen in Stockholm, here to tell us about a big jump in the Swedish Central Bank's policy rate as it battles inflation, and what that rate hike means for mortgage borrowers and for banks that lend to them in Sweden. Louise, hi. Welcome back to Focus on Finance.
Thank you, Danielle. Glad to be here.
So, Louise, the central bank in Sweden, known as the Riksbank, just raised its policy rate a full point to 1.75% from 0.75%, and forecast that the rate will be 2.5% by the third quarter of next year. So that's a pretty rapid rise, considering the rate was 0% as recently as the beginning of April 2022. So I thought maybe you could give our listeners a little context about why this is happening and also what it means for mortgage borrowers and the banks that lend to them in Sweden.
Of course. So the background is that inflation, as in many other countries, has proven higher and more stubborn than previous expectations. And inflation was actually running at a high 9% in August, and this is the highest rate for 30 years. So for banks, policy rate hikes are positive because they will raise banks' net interest margins more than they will increase costs. And there will still be loan growth. Corporates that had been funding themselves via debt issuance in the capital markets have a harder time doing that, and they will turn to banks instead.
Okay, and what about implications for mortgage borrowers?
So Moody's has viewed Swedish mortgages as being among the lowest risk classes in the world until now, And a main reason is the bank's conservative underwriting standards. They usually test that a borrower can manage a 6% interest rate before they even grant a mortgage loan. And previously, when mortgage rates were about 1.5%, this left a robust buffer or safety margin of about 4.5 percentage points. Now, the Riksbank's own projections, they point to a mortgage rate of about 4% next year. So this safety margin is quickly eroding. As most of the borrowers have mortgage rates that are variable, higher rates will be felt very quickly by the households. And this comes in addition to the high inflation. But the repayment culture in Sweden is very strong. And this is linked to the legal framework, which protects lenders. So mortgages remain low risk, but there are clearly increased vulnerabilities for banks in this segment.
Now, residential mortgages is one thing, but there's also a separate story around the property sector. And my co-host Miles Nelligan has just joined to unpack this very issue. He'll be talking to Louise and also to Maria Gilholm of the corporate finance team about what's in store for the real estate companies in Sweden and what it means for banks.
Thank you, Danielle. Hi, Louise and Maria. Welcome to you as well.
Hi, Miles.
Maria, let's start with you for some background on the property sector in Sweden. Now, Swedish real estate companies are pretty important in terms of the overall economy. And of course, they are a capital-intensive business and they're also big borrowers. And just lately, it looks like those borrowing costs have been rising. Could you perhaps dimension some of that for our listeners?
Yeah, sure, Miles. The Swedish property sector is large. A stability report from the from Sweden's Financial Supervisory Authority from 2021 say it accounts for 40% of Sweden's GDP, and that is by value of the properties. And as you pointed out, funding costs for property companies have significantly increased over the past several months. And that is reflecting the growing investor cautious due to high inflation, rapid interest rates increases, and slowing economic growth prospects, but also for some companies' corporate governance challenges. The real estate companies do borrow a lot and has also fairly short-term debt maturities, about 3 to 4 years, meaning that the wall of refinance is always within 2 years' time, as they need to refinance frequently.
So given these challenges, what's the trend been for debt issuance from property companies?
Coming back to the higher funding costs, which have in turn reduced bond issuance by the property companies, and some are also likely to turn to the banking system or other sources of financing to cover sizable upcoming debt maturities. We expect that some companies will reduce or cut dividends, divest assets, and issue equity to refinance, but also to reduce debt to keep credit quality. But just looking on the coming years, between now and 2026, the companies need to replace about 500 billion Swedish kronor in debt as it matures.
And that's about 44 billion US dollars, so a considerable amount. Maria, I wanted to ask you also, in Sweden, as elsewhere, central bank rates have gone up in recent months. How is that affecting the refinancing picture for property companies?
Rising interest rates will raise borrowing costs substantially for the real estate companies. And we have already seen a sharp drop in debt issuance from these companies. They will seek to shift financing away from bond markets and also look for alternative sources. The larger firms in particular will probably look to banks, but banks will choose and be picky which company they will support to refinance their bond maturities. And they will probably go for the companies that having stronger portfolio quality and also stronger credit quality.
Are there any other financing options that these companies can use?
Companies can use revolving credit facilities to refinance some of their upcoming debt maturities. As I said, in the longer term, some may have to reduce or cut dividends, issue equity or divest assets. It is fair to say that some companies can still enter the bond market, especially the high rated investment grade and also some of the high yield companies.
Maria, if these refinancing problems become acute, what would happen? What would a stress scenario look like in this sector?
A stress scenario could trigger a slump in real estate values. The positive impact of rising inflation-linked rental income will no longer mitigate rising interest rates and slowing economic growth. We expect that leverage could increase as widening yields and a weaker economy weigh on asset values. Higher interest rates, hedge maturities, refinancing needs, and new debt due to capital expenditures will also reduce EBITDA interest coverage.
Would the central bank be concerned about financial stability, Maria? And if so, what might it do?
During the pandemic, the Riksbank decided to enter the corporate bond markets, and the Riksbank then purchased 7.1 billion Swedish real estate bonds as part then of a wider corporate bond buying program during the pandemic. We believe that it would be reluctant to intervene again unless the real estate sector's refinancing problems would threaten the financial stability. And in this scenario, we would expect the Riksbank to provide liquidity to the sector by buying more real estate bonds, but also, of course, other corporate bonds. It would not only be for the real estate bonds, but it is slightly different if we compare with the ECB, which can buy directly from the issuers. The Riksbank can only buy on the secondary market, which would initially boost liquidity for the fixed income funds. For the real estate companies to benefit, fixed income funds would need to have sufficient net inflows to buy newly issued real estate bonds. The new issuance would in turn, of course, depend on sentiment in the real estate market, which is weakening.
Maria, thank you very much for that context and for highlighting the key areas of risk to Sweden's property sector. Louise, turning to you, what are the implications for banks in Sweden? And first of all, how much of their loan book is actually allocated to property company loans?
So banks' exposure to property companies is already substantial, and loans to real estate firms account for about 16% of the large banks' loan books on average. As for implications, the real estate companies, they will turn to the banks for additional lending going forward. And the four large lenders in Sweden, so Handelsbanken, Swedbank, SEB and Nordea, they have all said that they are ready to support existing customers with a strong business case. And whereas banks' responses and appetite to increase lending will vary, the already large exposure to the sector will reduce the appetite to increase lending substantially.
Do you expect the funding squeeze on the real estate companies to have an impact on Swedish banks' problem loans?
Not so much, actually, quite moderate. So problem loans in this sector are very low at the moment. They are around 0.1 to 0.2% of the books, so that's negligible. And the starting point is thus very strong. However, if the macroeconomic situation or the situation in the real estate sector deteriorates significantly, banks may have to increase provisioning. But loans are highly collateralized with low loan to values, so this will limit the need for increased provisions.
Banks also raised their underwriting standards, didn't they, after there were large property related losses in the financial crisis during the 1990s?
Yeah, that's right, Danielle. So the banks have learned their lesson, and underwriting criteria today focus on borrowers' cash flow and repayment ability under stress conditions. They also require strong collateral and maximum LTVs. So banks also generally require the real estate companies to hedge against interest rate rises, and they have been cautious regarding vulnerable sectors such as retail and hotels for years. Lastly, but very importantly, their loss absorption buffers in terms of profitability and capital are quite strong.
Thank you, Louise and Maria, Miles and Bob. Thank you all very much for your insights. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. To read any of the reports referenced in this podcast, you can click the link for this episode at moodys.com/podcasts, and you'll find the links in the show notes. And please tune in again soon for new episodes of Focus on Finance.
Thanks for listening to this Moody's Talks podcast. To find out more about the topics discussed, please follow the links in the show notes. You can check out other Moody's Talks podcasts by visiting moodys.com/podcasts.